Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. It is 3:31 p.m. here on Monday, April 24th. Happy Vic Fisher and Jack Coghill Constitution of the State of Alaska Day to everyone. We are meeting here in the Belts Committee Room in the State Capitol in the beautiful and lovely, yet albeit slightly damp, Juneau, Alaska. Just a quick reminder to folks, if they could please mute their cell phones. Joining me today is Senator Keel, Senator Gray Jackson, and myself, Senator Tobin. We also have joining us Senator Bjorkman. Please let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Thanks to Talia and to Mary Gwen, who are holding down the recording and LIO moderating fort for us. Today we have on the agenda the first hearing of Senate Bill 56. We will also be delving into the very complex and nuanced issue of school fund balances held by districts across the state. I know it's going to be titillating and exciting, so I hope you all stick around. For those who are interested, as always, our illustrious committee aide, Mike Mason, has left a smorgasbord of paper by the door. Please pick up at your leisure. All documents have also been posted on BASIS for those who would like to follow online. All right, first item of business up today is Senate Bill 56, the Alaska Performance Scholarship and Eligibility. We do have a committee substitute for the bill, and that committee substitute should be in your packet for today's meeting. Senator Gray Jackson, may I please have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt Work Order 33-LS0350/B as our working document for Senate Bill 56. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'm going to object for the purposes of discussion. However, as this is the first time we're hearing the bill, I believe the bill's sponsor, Mr. Senator Dunbar, and his aide will be providing us an analysis and introduction of the bill. So please come on up. If you could please identify yourself for the records and begin your presentation when you are ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As the chairwoman indicated, there were substantial changes made in the other body, and so we will just introduce both at the same time, the underlying bill and the changes which we agree with, and hopefully we'll move forward. So, as members are likely aware, the Alaska Performance Scholarship has been a key tool for keeping young, talented Alaskans in our state. Indeed, my chief of staff was a recipient of the scholarship, and she is going to speak on the bill and the program in more depth. According to an analysis by the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, the APS influenced 68% of eligible students to attend school in state. 2 years after graduation, 94% of APS recipients stayed in Alaska compared to 82% of non-recipients. 8 years after graduation, 70% of APS recipients remained in state compared to 63% of non-recipients. We've been talking in this body about working age population decline, and this program speaks directly to that challenge. Unfortunately, recent years have shown a sharp decline in eligibility and uptake of the scholarship. While the pandemic was a contributing factor, a McDowell study identified key barriers, such as logistical difficulties for taking college entrance exams, especially in rural Alaska, a lack of awareness of the program, and delayed notification of the award. SB 56 addresses these concerns and implements recommendations from that study and the aforementioned Commission on Postsecondary Education. With these changes, I hope to see more Alaskans using the APS, choosing Alaska schools, and staying in state. So very quickly, this is what SB 56 actually does. First, it increases the award amount so it is up to date with inflation. Next, it allows a student's GPA or a college entrance exam score to qualify instead of requiring both. It also expands eligibility to include CTE courses. It extends the time used to use the scholarship from 6 to 8 years after graduation, and it establishes an earlier eligibility notification deadline so students have more time to choose Alaska schools. And I'll speak to that briefly. When I was door knocking in my district that abuts and contains UAA, I actually ran into an employee who brought exactly this issue up while I was door knocking, that we notify students too late, and some of them have already made their college decision. And had they known they were going to get the APS, they may have chosen to stay here and go to the University of Alaska. I'd like to note that even with expected increasing eligibility and usage, the APS will continue to be funded only from the Higher Education Investment Fund and will not use any UGF. Currently, APS recipients are required to complete a rigorous curriculum in high school, meet a certain GPA, and receive a minimum test score on a qualifying exam to be eligible for the award. This offers an incentive for Alaska students to excel in high school and ensure they are more than prepared for post-secondary education. Additionally, once enrolled in post-secondary education, award recipients must meet continuing eligibility requirements, further incentivizing them to succeed and excel in coursework. I will now leave it to my Chief of Staff, Aliana Salingui, to go over the sectional and the changes made in the CS to match the version in the other body. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation when you are ready.
For the record, Aliana Salingui, Chief of Staff to Senator Dunbar. We're going to start, obviously, with Section 1, which amends AS 1443820 Alaska Performance Scholarship Program to allow high school students to qualify for the APS 18 months before they graduate instead of 6 months. Students are still required to meet all requirements at the time of graduation to ultimately meet the receive the award. Section 1 also amends eligibility requirements to allow for career and technical education or CTE credits and courses to count towards eligibility. Currently, there are 2 curriculum tracks students can follow to receive an APS award, a math and science track and a social studies and language arts track. Under the math and science track, Section 1 allows a year of CTE to replace a year of social studies. Under the social studies and language arts track, there are 2 options. Option 1 is similar to the math and science option, which would allow a year of CTE to replace a year of social studies. Option 2 allows 2 years of CTE courses to replace the required 2 years of foreign language. 1 year of the 2 must include 2 semesters of sequentially more rigorous content within the same career cluster, which is defined later in Section 2 as a group of jobs and industries that are related by skills or products. Additionally, language requiring a college entrance exam or standardized test, usually the ACT, SAT, or WorkEase, is removed. However, the committee substitute updates language in Section 4 to allow a minimum GPA or a minimum test score to qualify instead of requiring both. Section 2 includes the definition for career cluster referred to earlier. Section 3 adds notification requirements for the school districts and the Alaska Commission of Post-Secondary Education, or ACPE. ACPE. School districts are required to inform 9th and 10th graders of the Alaska Performance Scholarship by January 15th of each year. This was a change added in the committee substitute. School districts are also required to notify 11th graders of the remaining requirements they need to meet to be eligible for the APS by December 31st of their junior year, instead of January 31st in version A. Additionally, all district communications with students regarding the APS must also include information about the opportunity to qualify for a higher level award during their post-secondary education. This process is outlined later on in Section 6. The Alaska Commission of Post-Secondary Education, or the Commission, is required to notify eligible recipients that they will be receiving the award and what level award they are receiving by August 15th of each year. In version A, it was September 30th. And again, all students must meet the curriculum and GPA or test score requirements upon graduation and enroll in a qualifying post-secondary institution to receive the award. Section 4 includes the GPA and test score requirements for the 3 levels of the award. A reminder, under the CS, a qualifying GPA or a minimum test score will qualify for the award instead of requiring both. Section 4 also adjusts the award amounts for the first time since the program's inception. The GPA requirements, test scores, and annual award amounts are as follows. Level 1 is a 3.5 GPA or higher, or a very high score on a college entrance exam. That'll qualify for $7,000, which is increased from $4,755. A Level 2 award requires a 3.0 GPA or above, or a high score, and qualifies for a $5,250 award, increased from $3,566. Level 3 is a 2.5 GPA or higher, or a moderately high score, and that'll qualify for a $3,500 award, increased from $2,378. Section 5 allows students to use the scholarship 8 years after their high school graduation instead of 6 years. And last, Section 6 provides the opportunity for award recipients to qualify for a higher level of the APS during their post-secondary education. This was a new section added in the CS. And the process for this is post-secondary institutions must review award recipients' GPAs each time they complete 2 semesters. If their college GPA meets the GPA requirement for a higher level award, the institution has to notify ACPE and the award recipient's award level will be adjusted accordingly. In practice, this looks like somebody graduated from high school qualifying for a level 2 award because they had a 3.0 GPA. GPA, but after two semesters in college, they have a 3.5 GPA, which would qualify them for the Level 1 award, and then they would be eligible for that, and their next disbursement should be adjusted accordingly. And that's it.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members? I do have one question, just regards the references to GPA. Are there any high schools in the state of Alaska that grade not using a grade point average system, they use a different type of scale?
You know, I'm not sure, Madam Chair. We do have some invited testifiers that might be able to speak to that.
That might be helpful also with post-secondary education, as I see that as the opportunity in Section 6 to increase your award. However, I'm not sure if all of the institutions use a grade point average system. So maybe providing some flexibility might behoove us. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, I'm going to remove my objection. And that means work order 33-LS0350-B is adopted as our working document. And with that, I know we have several invited testifiers, and so we will move on to those unless there's any other questions. And seeing none, we have Sana Ifrit as the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Ms. Ifrit, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation when you are ready. Oh, and if you know the answers to my questions, I would love an answer.
Good afternoon, Chair Tobin and members of the committee. Thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Sana Ifrit. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And I do believe there may be, and I think maybe our homeschoolers do not necessarily have GPA sometime, but we do have at this point a way to calculate those to our regulations, because currently our homeschool, our correspondents, and all of our districts are eligible for the APS.
Thank you. Please begin your presentation when you are ready.
So the Commission on Post-Secondary Education's mission is to provide access and success in for Alaskan students and adults in their post-secondary endeavors. And so the Alaska Performance Scholarship is a huge piece of providing that access, the financial ability for students to actually afford their post-secondary programs. And so, as has already been shared with you, the Alaska Performance Scholarship was enacted in 2011 by the Alaska Legislature. I'm sorry, let me get my information here straight. And since 2011, the APS, or the Alaska Performance Scholarship, has awarded almost 12,000 Alaska students who excel in high school with over $100 million in scholarships to help cover the cost of in-state post-secondary education. The legislature enacted this program to inspire and prepare high school students for success. And the Performance Scholarship, when it was enacted, had four primary objectives. Offer incentive for Alaska students to excel in high school, to prepare Alaska students for college and career training, to help Alaska students succeed and complete their post-secondary programs, and to keep skilled, high-achieving graduates in Alaska and therefore in our workforce. Each year, the Commission on Post-Secondary Education, in statute, is required to provide to the legislature an outcomes report. And this year, you received that outcomes report, the 2023, which was information on the 2022 class. And in that report, you also, I believe in your packets that Mr. Mason has provided to you, kind of a summary of the outcomes report, which really shows that the Performance Scholarship is delivering on those objectives and goals that it was put in place to do. Number one, the APS offers, it shows in our outcomes report, it offers incentive for Alaska students to excel in high school. Over 70% that take the APS curriculum and meet those eligibility, 70% of those students receive better grades. 60% of the students take challenging courses, and 57% seek academic advising, which is another key factor to success in pursuing post-secondary. Number two, it shows in our outcomes report that the APS curriculum prepares Alaska students for college and career training, and only 5% of APS recipients require developmental coursework as they go on into their post-secondary programs, as compared with over 30% of non-recipients. Also, the APS helps Alaska students persist and complete in college. They APS students succeed at higher rates than non-recipients at the University of Alaska. And next, APS retains skilled Alaskans in Alaska. Our information shows that APS recipients have higher Alaska residency rates than non-residency rates. After a number of years, they continue to be and stay in Alaska at higher rates. So we know through our surveys and data through the university and our other post-secondary programs that the APS delivers on those original objectives. However, we also have been seeing a decline in use of the APS. And so therefore, in 2020, the commission contracted with the McKinley Research Group, which was a McDowell group, to perform an evaluation and review of the program. The legislature rightfully always wants to know, are we getting the outcomes that we're paying for? And so we wanted to do a full 10-year look back. And in that look back, the McKinley report noted that there were a number of recommendations that came out of the report that would improve the usage of the APS. And so since about, I believe the use of the APS peaked in about 2016, and since that time it has been declining, with the class of 2022 being the lowest percentage eligible for the award and use of the award at only 17% of the class. Therefore, the recommendations put forth in this performance review report, we had been working with a number of legislators for a few years to see if those recommendations could be enacted to change the program to open up the eligibility and continue to meet the needs and achieve the outcomes, but to a larger group of students. And so this bill that's before you today actually takes the recommendations from the McKinley Research Report and includes them in the legislation to help open this program for more students. And so I'm happy to answer questions, provide more information, more details, whatever would be helpful for you and your consideration.
Are there any questions for Ms. Efren? Seeing none, thank you very much. That was very insightful. Next up, we have Sarah Perman, the State Government Relations Manager for the University of Alaska. Ms. Perman, if you could please state your name and title for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sarah Perman. I'm the State Relations Manager for the University of Alaska System, and that's statewide for University of Alaska Anchorage, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and University of Alaska Southeast. I'm here today just to testify in support of Senate Bill 56. We certainly recognize and value the the Alaska Performance Scholarship. As Ms. Eford said, that was created in 2011 with the intention of combating the brain drain, as we called it, and having Alaska students leave state and potentially not come back. So we, the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, implemented this, and we have since seen an increase in our students who are staying, who are utilizing the Performance Scholarship, and the intention with us is very much to keep them here to join the workforce once they've graduated. We see approximately 80% of University of Alaska graduates stay in state and join the workforce. So we are supportive of any measures that keep Alaska students here in state after high school graduation. Specifically, we like all the measures of this bill. I want to just call attention specifically to the barriers that Ms. Eford discussed earlier. The award notice, we find that allowing students to see that they'd be awarded this before their senior year begins gives them time to assess this financial aid package up against other packages. When they're being noticed in spring of senior year, that comes too late, too little too late, and they've already seen packages from other schools. And so we're very much in support of earlier award notice there. The standardized testing requirements, removing that, we found that that disproportionately impacts students from rural Alaska as it stands, but also that we found that during the pandemic, we removed those barriers and that increased eligibility from 23% in 2019 to 37% in 2021. So it certainly allowed more students the eligibility for the program. We don't use that already for our UA Scholars program, and have just found that that's not the best indicator of our students' performance, and rather our GPA is the best way that we can measure that as we go. We are supportive of allowing career and technical education credits to be applied here. We certainly want students who are looking at our other programs within the university, with whether that's our CTE courses, et cetera, to also feel that this is accessible to them, and that expands the eligibility certainly for who can apply. Let's see, I've covered award notice, and I think the last piece is just the award amount. We're really pleased to see that given inflation and the cost of student education having increased so much over the years, this really just removes one last barrier for students and makes us more accessible. So overall, we're very pleased and in support of this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, I thank you so much for your testimony, Ms. Perman. It is my intention to hold this bill to our Wednesday meeting where we will take public testimony. Senator Dunbar, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you so very much. We will now move to our next item on the agenda, which is hearing from our school district officials about their fund balance. I do want to note for the record that we have a few folks joining us here today, which means we have about 10 minutes per presentation. So please just keep that in your mind. I am terrible at holding folks to time. It is a failing of having the last name Tobin. Just never do anything on time. With that, to join us today, we have Andrew DeGraw, who's the Chief Operations Officer from Fairbanks North Star Borough, which will be our first presentation today. I would like to note, for folks who might need assist, we do have Elwin Blackwell, the School Finance Manager, and Lacey Sanders, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development, here for any questions or assists if they so need them. Mr. DeGraw, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready. Again, you have about 10 minutes.
Thank you. Can members of the committee hear me?
We can.
All right. Thank you, Chair Tobin and members of the committee. My name is Andy DeGraw. I'm the Chief Operations Officer of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. Appreciate this opportunity to testify to the committee today, and just wanted to acknowledge up front the difficult budget situation that we find ourselves in, the definitely challenging circumstances, and there's no real easy answers or solutions, a lot of different varying viewpoints and positions and opinions, and I personally, as do many districts around the state, acknowledge the difficulty of that process. So just jump to slide number 2. Just a brief outline of my presentation. I'm going to spend the majority of my time addressing the deed fund balance report that was dated 4/17/2023. And then I'll also briefly update the committee on the financial position and outlook here in the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. Before I jump into that, I just kind of wanted to make a general statement. Fund balance is to school districts as the CBR is to the state. The CBR is a very important part of the budget process in the state of Alaska, as it should be. It's very difficult to tap into those funds, as it should be. It provides the state continuity in difficult financial situations, helps the state confront unforeseen circumstances that arrive, financial emergencies, et cetera, et cetera. In that same fashion, school districts all over the state of Alaska rely on healthy fund balances. And that's never been so important as the last 2 to 3 years that we've gone through, navigated the pandemic. Those fund balance funds are extremely important. I'm not advocating any change to how we hold fund balance at state or district level. I just, in my experience, oftentimes fund balances at the school district level are seen as a negative, seen as a pot of money that ought to be tapped into to fund regular ongoing district operations. And I would just counter that opinion or position that school district need these funds to be able to plan, to be able to confront financial challenges as they arise. One other thing that's important to note, the state of Alaska has the ability to increase revenue if it so desires. School districts lack the ability. Here in Fairbanks, we're solely dependent on outside sources for our revenue. So jumping to the next slide, I'm going to go over line column by column the numbers that we see here in Fairbanks and just provide a narrative to the different numbers that are shown on the report. I want to point out, I value and appreciate the relationship that we have forged here with the department over the last years. I've been with the district 5 years, appreciate the relationship we have with them. However, at the same time, we want to provide a counter narrative to that report that has been put forward to the public. There's some information that's accurate. There's other information that technically on the surface it's accurate, but there's a lot to the story that's not necessarily available to the school district to spend. And then there's other items on the report that we feel are inaccurate outright. So it's always important to realize that numbers can be both right and wrong at the same time. They might be technically correct, but if there's an implication that they're able to be used for a certain purpose, or timing could be a very big issue, the timing of the data can lead to misinformation and misunderstanding. So without further ado, we'll jump in. Next slide, number five. This number, this first column, unreserved fund balance, that number is accurate for the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. We are officially at $0 in unreserved fund balance. If you look at, and before I forget, all of my information today, I can back up and provide additional information with our audited annual financial statements. So all of this information is backed up by our annual audited report. We are at zero of unreserved fund balance. If you see our audited financial statements, it'll show there will be some dollars there, but those dollars are either restricted or identified to a future point in time. So we have things like non-spendable, which is our inventories. There's restricted monies, which is our allotments that we provide to homeschool families and students. And then there's impact aid dollars there. There's a relatively small number of districts around the state that receive impact aid. And those dollars, as of 6/30/2022, the date of the report, those dollars are for a future point in time. So while our audited financial statement shows dollars in our general fund, the amount we have available to spend on FY24's budget is officially zero. Next slide. On the pupil transportation column, this number is shown as $4.7 million on the deed report. It's a little bewildering to us that includes dollars that are officially restricted by the state of Alaska to transportation purposes. So dollars that would be unavailable to use on general fund operations. Approximately $1 million of those are restricted. $3.7 million of those funds is technically available to the school district. However, if you go to the next slide, I'll provide context to those dollars. We technically, school transportation funding has not been adjusted for 8 consecutive years. And the blue line there represents our full service budgeted transportation services. And the orange represents revenue from the state transportation grant. So we run at full service, we would run about a $3.5 million deficit. Typically over history, we've subsidized our transportation services with our general fund. That fund balance has grown over the last couple of years through the pandemic because of school closure as well as a nationwide driver shortage. So currently we've had the luxury of zeroing out the transfer, the subsidy from the general fund. And we have the ability to rely on this fund balance. We estimate that within 2 years, as we return to full service, as our contractor continues to add drivers and routes back, that we'll exhaust that fund balance in 2 years on our transportation services. If we were to drain that account and then continue to add back service, we'd have to reduce transportation services to our community next year if we were to do that. Next slide. This looks at our capital construction column. So about $2.4 million, $2.3 million there. The majority of these funds are a cooperation with our local borough here to do 2 roof projects. One is completed, one is still ongoing. The other smaller portion is federal impact aid, specifically identified as construction dollars. So we in theory could move portions of these dollars, but it would be a significant process in time and effort to undo. We have an MOU with the borough to fund these roof projects, and it would be a significant process to undo that. And it involves political process. So for all intents and purposes, not available to fund regular operations of the district. Next slide. This is the column titled Other Governmental Funds. This column for Fairbanks is listed at just over $13 million. The middle blue number there is a total of all remaining funds that we have identified in our annual financial reports. So we are unable to account for approximately $2.4 million in this column as it relates to the number that Deed presented on the report. So I'm going to go through, and not all of these are governmental funds. Some are, some aren't. The next slide highlights the 4 main funds in this category. The Nutrition Services Fund is one of those. It is a governmental fund. There's $2.4 million. Those funds are restricted to nutrition services operations here in the school district. So, we internally here in Fairbanks, we talk about dollars that are officially restricted by a government entity. If you take those dollars and move those somewhere else, gentlemen or ladies in dark suits and dark sunglasses show up at your porch one morning and then you're in some trouble. There's other funds that I'm going to talk about here in just a minute. The question that we have internally is, does it pass the newspaper test? So that's the next one, student activities. It's a smaller amount there represented, $1.6 million. These are funds raised by our students and community for specific sports or activities at our schools. So does it pass the newspaper test? Technically, we could tap into those dollars, but many of those dollars were raised, for example, for Lathrop football. Would it pass the red face test if, the headline read school district moves fundraised football activity funds to pay for, a software contract or teacher salaries or something of that nature? So, again, technically available, but for all intents and purposes, that would cause significant problems for our school district if we were to tap into those funds. Other major funds in this category, these are not government funds. Our insurance risk fund, we are self-insured in Fairbanks, and about $3.7 million is sitting to pay ongoing health, property, and casualty liability claims. We run between $35 and $40 million through that fund each year. And so that's an amount that's basically a revolving door that amount pays for those ongoing claims. Student and staff devices, we run a one-to-one student device program in the district. We had partially stood that program up before COVID-19 hit. As the pandemic hit and we were looking at school closures, we quickly stood that program up 100%, and that's just under $3 million helps to fund ongoing student and staff device needs that we replace on about a four-year cycle. Next slide.
Mr. Trump, this is kind of a focal point. Time check here. You have about 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Chair Tobin. I'll wrap up here briefly. The deed report represents a little over $16 million of COVID funds available as of April 15th. We cannot reconcile this number. As of December 31st, 2022, we only had $14 million per the grant management system that the state uses to reimburse districts COVID expenditures. So there is a discrepancy there that we cannot account for. Next slide. So the really what we're looking at is, and the question is, I think the intent of the document is, look, the real question is, what are school districts going to have to budget available for FY24? That's really, if we whittle down all the noise, what are we trying to determine? What are districts going to have for FY24? And we've identified $4.9 million of the COVID funds. Fairbanks received about $33 million in total funds. We are going to have just under $5 million remaining at the end of FY23 to be budgeted for FY24. And those funds are already budgeted for in our FY24 budget. And next slide, just a brief outlook of a position of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. Next slide, please. Over the last three to four years, we've reduced 180 positions district-wide. That's a little over 10% of our workforce compared to 2020. In 2022, we closed three elementary schools. That was a very painful process for our community, but one that we felt was necessary. The point of my talking points here is just to show, you know, and this is the case with many districts around the state, we're not just sitting and asking for more money. We're making necessary changes. We're making hard decisions. Boards of education around the state are making hard decisions, just like you are at the state level, and making necessary changes. 32, far right, that's our projected class size for our high schools in the school district. That's just a target. We will inevitably at that level have high school class sizes of over 35, from 35 to 40. And so the situation getting quite dire. And then next slide, wrapping up here. Total overall FY24 deficit started at $17 million. And there's a combination of increased asks from our borough here in Fairbanks, as well as budget cuts. And then the final slide in my presentation. Very appreciative of the bill sponsored by Chair Tobin and her efforts to provide much needed relief, financial relief to school districts. Here in Fairbanks, I would officially ask for a $1,000 BSA increase, a permanent increase, statutory increase to that education funding. That would specifically help us restore all the cuts that we've had to make here in FY24. Help us address the REEDS Act, the needs, the unfunded mandate, the needs in the REEDS Act, and then look at actually being able to invest and restore some of those other cuts that we've made over the prior years, and really help us start to get a solid footing and move forward in a good way to do the district, to do the business that we do. So appreciate the committee's time today allowing me to testify, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. DeGraw. Do we have any questions from committee members? Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Mr. DeGraw, for being with us at Center Education today. I have a question. Does your office provide your school board with quarterly or more often financial reports that explain the current expenditures that you have made throughout the budget process, and what amounts of money are left, and any budget transfers that happen as a regular part of your board process?
Yeah, that's a great question. Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, yes, we provide monthly updates to the board containing the information that you referenced.
So if the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development wanted to go and look at real-time data for what you all had as far as fund balances or your operating budget and what you had spent and how that relates to your previous year's audited financials as well as your approved budget, so that they could get a handle on what your fund balances are. They could do that. Is that correct?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, that is correct. I would just add the caveat that that would be, I would imagine, for the department, a timely endeavor, a time-consuming endeavor. But yes, they would be able to do that. Again, you know, the nature of when they were requested to provide information and how long they had to put that information together, I can't speak to. But yes, that information is there. And that's really the purpose of, I think, my testimony, as well as those that will follow, is just there's, again, as I mentioned before, there's information that is technically correct. There's two main problems that pop up. Are the funds really available to dedicate to regular general fund operations of school districts? And I would submit to the committee that $36 million is identified in the report, and the Fairbanks will not have $36 million available. And so there's some items there that, as I mentioned, food service, that's restricted. There's transportation dollars restricted. We are unable to use those funds. And secondly, I would just say it's also inaccurate, some of the information in that the timing, the nature of when we report today, I would submit that what is reported today in the grant management system, this is to the COVID column, the COVID dollar, this is really important. What's seen today is already out. School districts, many of them are submitting on a quarterly basis. So by the time, and for reimbursement, we're spending the dollars in advance and then requesting reimbursement from the state after the fact. So by the time numbers show up in the state system, they're already outdated. And so back to that, our accounting department is projecting the dollar amount we expect to have remaining. And that's just a fraction of the $16 million of COVID funds that's listed out for Fairbanks. Just under $5 million will remain, less than a third. And I would suspect that would be there would be a similar story for virtually every district in the state of Alaska.
Thank you very much, Mr. DeGraw. I appreciate knowing that you all have monthly financial reports that are public, but also given to your board that clearly describe what amounts of money you are expending, as well as what fund balances are as it relates to your audited financials from the previous year and the budget that you all agreed to ahead of time. It's valuable. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam. Just a follow-up, Mr. DeGraw, on Senator Bjorkman's question. That online grant management system, is that going to be a relatively up-to-date source of information on those COVID dollars? If I could log into that, would that get me up to date? What would account for discrepancies between that and the current day?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Senator. Through the chair, Senator Keel, in my estimation, it's just not an up-to-date number because, as I mentioned, you know, not all districts. Some districts, I believe, will request reimbursement on a monthly basis, but many districts are requesting on a quarterly basis. And so we're running through Fairbanks, for example, is running through $1 million to $1.5 million a month. Probably I'd say closer to $1.5 million a month. We're only submitting those requests for reimbursement on a quarterly basis. So right now, the last quarter that ended was March 31st. We still, and so that would be for expenditures spent between January 1 and March 31. We still haven't requested those expenses for reimbursement. We have a certain period of time, it might be 4 weeks. So the last information really that would be showing up for Fairbanks would be the December 31st number. And so, you know, that's kind of a long response as to the why, but the short answer to your question, Senator Keel, is I would, in my estimation, those are not up-to-date numbers, and they can be several million dollars out of date, as is the case for Fairbanks. For Fairbanks, several million dollars off that GMS number can be.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Thank you, Mr. DeGraw. Senator Bjorkman.
Real quick. Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned your starting deficit number here, and then you had $4-something million, I think, out of COVID funds. What's your hole left that you have to cut in order to make up for your 24 budget?
Yeah, so we have 17 million dollar deficit. We have the 4 million and change budgeted from COVID funds. We've increased the ask of our borough here in Fairbanks. And then we've made several million dollars in cuts. So, and we're still increasing class sizes. There's still a $3 to $4 million remaining hole. We have increased class sizes at the secondary level. And it's still uncertain if the local ask that the Board of Education has made to our borough will be met. So I would say there's significant doubt there in what that final number will be. Maybe not surprisingly, there's probably several boroughs around the state that are asking the question, you know, what's the state ultimately going to do? And that will have no doubt have an impact on what they do. So we still have, I would estimate a $5 to $10 million hole based on that uncertainty that we would need to fill, minimum of a $3 million hole, and it's likely going to be higher than that, depending on how that local funding comes out. Hopefully that made sense.
Yes,
thank you. A lot of moving parts.
Thank you very much. We are now moving to Mr. Lon Garrison, the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, who's here and live and in person. Thank you again, Mr. DeGraw. Mr. Garrison, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready. I apologize. We are going to run short on time, so I'm going to ask you to keep your comments hopefully under 10 minutes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Lon Garrison. I serve as the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. So I'm here today to speak to you from the perspective of school boards and their governance obligations regarding the financial oversight, including budget spending approval. A claim last week by the administration purports to assert that Alaska school districts have adequate fund balances and unspent COVID funds that could be used in lieu of an increase to the BSA. The insinuation is that school boards, as the locally elected public governing bodies responsible for the oversight of public funds, have not been transparent and forthright in their advocacy for a need in the increase of the BSA. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Local school boards are governed by board policy that is adopted to implement state and federal laws and regulations concerning the operation of a public school system. The Association of Alaska School Boards provides model policies that nearly every district in the state has adopted and or have modified to their local circumstances. Section 3000 of our model policies, business and non-instructional operations, contains policies related to the financial oversight and management of a district. Here are a few of the model policies that are germane to our discussions today, and they're amended to my written public testimony. Board Policy 3000 talks about the concepts and roles of board responsibilities versus the administration. Board Policy 3100 talks about the budget, and it enables the implementation of AS 14-17-900, requiring a balanced budget to be adopted and approved by deed each year. It must be a balanced budget. Board Policy 3300, Expenditures and Expending Authority. Board Policy 3400, Management of District Assets and Accounts. This complies with 4AAC 06120 and Statute 1414-050, requiring compliance with state reporting guidelines and implementing a financial audit by a third-party accounting firm. Board Policy 3460 is a periodic financial report to Senator Bjorkman's earlier question, and regular financial reports must be made to the school board to keep them informed in the district's financial condition. And the final one that I pulled out is Board Policy 3470, which talks about fund balance classification, and this would be a great one to refer to in the future. You will you are hearing from several school district business officials describing the complexity of school district fund balance accounting. Most important, legislators need to know, like school boards, is that funds the district receives may be reserved or dedicated to a specific purpose, as you just heard. At times, reporting of those funds can be very confusing unless it is accompanied by a narrative that describes whether they are reserved, dedicated, or assigned. These often include specific federal funds and grants, some special state funding through deed or other agencies, and occasionally private foundation grants or awards. School boards, acting in their oversight role, know that it is critically important that a district maintains an unreserved fund balance that provides opportunity to maintain cash flow, to keep the district financially operating in a way that aligns with best practices. The Government Finance Officers Association recommends a minimum of 2 months of operating funds to be held in reserve. AS 1417-505 stipulates that districts may not maintain an unreserved fund balance greater than 10% for their general fund budget. That currently has been waived until FY25. In addition, nearly every school district in the state utilizes federal grant programs, and over the last 2 years has utilized COVID relief funds. School boards are required to accept those grant funds and assume the legal authority and responsibility for their use and reporting. While these funds may show up as revenue through a grant award notification, they are all reimbursable grants, as you've just been hearing about. Districts must first expend effort, document those expenses, and then apply for reimbursement. This is another critically important role of maintaining a healthy fund balance. Most districts accepted the various COVID funds made available by the federal government, and these funds were accompanied by strong guidance and stipulations on their use to help counter the adverse effects of the pandemic on learning loss, student health, safety, and welfare. One of the caveats of accepting COVID funds was that each state would not supplant its support of education funding. It is improper for the administration to suggest that unspent COVID funds be utilized to support the state's constitutional requirement to maintain its public education system. I'll wrap up this testimony by stepping back from all the technical jargon and the statute and regulation references to address this issue from a common sense perspective, having been on a school board for a considerable amount of time myself. If school boards truly had vast reserves that could be used to fund current educational programs, would it make sense that they are laying off or reducing staff, eliminating programs, increasing class size, and struggling to meet the requirements of the Alaska Reads Act? Why would districts go through the motions to close schools? Why would many contract negotiations with bargaining units end up in mediation or arbitration? The short answer is they would spend the necessary funds to keep staff employed and better paid. They would reduce class sizes, not increase them. They would gladly keep pools open, like the pool in Seward that produced an outstanding gold medalist, Lydia Jacoby. It simply makes no sense. Asserting that school districts are sitting on millions of dollars of unspent funds is disingenuous. I urge the legislature not to be distracted by such antics and to continue to work to sufficiently fund Alaska schools so that every student has an opportunity for an excellent education every day. Senate Bill 52, currently lingering in Senate Finance, is the appropriate response to our education funding challenge. I have two final comments. School district budget reports are available to the public, and that information is available for each school district, as was just pointed out. So anybody has access to that information should they want it. It's public information. In today's environment of inadequate education funding, boards cannot budget for what they truly need. But now they have to budget for only what they think they can get. Spending is not outcome-driven any longer, but instead driven by funds and maintaining a minimum amount of effort to make the school system operate. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Garrison? Seeing none, we'll move on to Bridget Weiss, the superintendent of the Juneau School District, who is also here in person. Ms. Weiss, if you could please identify yourself for the record, begin your presentation with you are ready. You have about 10 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chair Tobin. For the record, I'm Dr. Bridget Weiss, superintendent in Juneau. Thank you. And Juneau School District. And I'm here today in support of an increase in the base student allocation and in response to providing some specific information regarding fund balances and COVID funding. So today I'll share a few things. I'll try to do that quickly in case you have questions related to our district and our finances. So specifically in Juneau, we have a policy 3470 that requires a minimum fund balance each year of 1.5%, which in Juneau means about $1.5 million. And in order to lower that amount, a majority of the board has to vote. Four out of our seven board members would have to support that. And they have in recent years in order to try to make ends meet. They did not feel like we could budget for an adequate school year and maintain that 1.5%. And I'm going to show you just a little bit of how that played out for us. While that was well intended and for all the right reasons, trying to put every dollar possible into classrooms to support students and the staff that support them, this is what it looked like for us. Each year when we build a budget, we anticipate what the fund balance will be because we're budgeting prior to June 30th. So we have to anticipate and say we believe we're going to have a fund balance, an unassigned fund balance, of a certain amount. So for us in FY20, right as COVID hit in March, our budget for the next year, this was the year before COVID happened, we projected a $574,000 fund balance. What happened at the end of FY20 is our actual unassigned fund balance was $30,603 in the red. So we had spent all of our available operating fund. In FY21, we knew we couldn't make up that difference all at once. We were planning now for a year where we knew COVID existed, and we were trying to make all kinds of operational decisions. So the board voted to have a lower fund balance than that 1.5% and budgeted at $213,700. To end that year, we were at zero. So we weren't red, but we were literally at zero. We spent every dollar we had. So that, of course, carried on to the next year, and the board realized, well, we cannot plan on a higher fund balance right now. The needs are so great. So they voted to actually expend all of their projected fund balance in their FY22 budget. What happened at the end of FY22, so these are actual numbers. Again, these are based on audited numbers, what I'm sharing with you today. So, and I'll talk a little bit about why they don't necessarily look the same on, all look the same on that table that you received. But by the end of FY22, on June 30th, our audited deficit in our operational unassigned fund balance was $1.8 million. And the reason for that were several funds. One major one being transportation. And our window of margin of flex, it just got smaller and smaller and smaller. So in FY23 for this year, we said we can't do that again. So we have to leave something in our fund balance budget with something there. So we went back up to $272,000. We don't know obviously how that's going to pan out in the very end of on June 30 coming up. Transportation, I mentioned, was one of those, and this is a budget that you can, a number you can see on that table. And this I will leave with you. I won't go through all these numbers, obviously, but it really does tell the story of right before COVID, the couple years before COVID hit, and then to current day. Transportation is one of our most challenging fiscal situations because we literally get the same dollars per student that we did in August of 2015. So we're trying to budget a transportation program on the same dollars as August of 2015. And what happened, as you can see here, is when we hit those COVID years, we began to not be able to generate the same revenue as expenses. We were in a contract that we were committed to, and we ended up using our bus drivers and our buses for delivery of food, as an example, putting meals together, delivering food to pick up points for families in that fall of 20. So we ended that year with a deficit of $375,000 roughly in transportation. That carried on into the next few years because, again, our costs kept going up for operations and that flat transportation funding. And we simply realized that we have no way to make it up once we get in that hole. And so we are requesting support from our local assistance. Assembly for assistance this year with this. One of the things that I wanted to say back here was one of the other things that happened in this story is that when we do our audit at the end of every fiscal year, at some point in that audit document, all the funds come together. Like every penny we have shows up on paper. And what had happened until FY22 was that we had a few other funds with residual balances in. They were assigned fund balances, but there were balances, a little bit in food service, a little bit in pre-K because we got multiple grants coming in. Our activities fund that was mentioned in Fairbanks where parents and kids fundraise. Those things masked that deficit, but what happened in FY22 that the deficit became so large that didn't mask it any longer, and we actually have a red $63,000 on our audit from June 2022, including all funds. So even when all funds were on the table, we were red. Not a place a school district, a school board wants to be. One quick item that just is an example of rising costs. So one line item we have, our property liability insurance. We collaborate with our city and borough of Juneau for our insurance. So we already are doing every strategy we can to minimize our costs, but this tells a story on one line item in our budget from FY20 to projected for FY24, our cost. And so this is just representative of some of those costs that we know certain things increase. We know salaries have to go up, benefits go up, the cost of fuel goes up. Some of those things are we get because we are all living those things in our own personal worlds. This is pretty staggering. Within a budget where there is absolutely no flesh, this type of a line item absolutely takes our knees out from under us and is part of what contributed to those deficits. Specifically for COVID funding, there are, again, to repeat the previous speaker, COVID funds are processed through a reimbursement strategy. So we don't receive funds until we expend them and we apply for reimbursement. And it's a quarterly system. So the numbers on that chart were gathered April 15th. The next reimbursement is April 30th. And the next one after that is July 31st. So we have two more reimbursement dates coming up. So for Juneau, what that means is we anticipate $1.6 million for expenditure next year that we have planned and diligently budgeted in order to carry out our supports as we could, as balanced as we could over the course of COVID funding and not end up with a cliff at the end. And so our actual number that we have budgeted for next year for COVID funding is $1.6 million, not the $3.3 million that you see on that chart as available. So just at last comments, just sort of what that means in terms of a landscape for FY24 for us. Our school board every year has to build a budget based on a lot of assumptions. State funding is one of those assumptions. So this year with optimism here, the board simply with those deficits haunting us could not figure out how to balance a budget on a $30 increase and not wreak complete havoc and chaos on our operations. So in order to build a budget that was as practical as possible, they very diligently decided to project a $430 BSA increase. That was not a number they wanted. It was a number that they felt didn't extend the risk too far in either direction. So to budget on what we really believe we needed was too big of a risk, because if that $400 doesn't come through, we have to go back to the budget table and my board has to figure out how to cut $3.3 million out of the budget that they have presented to the city for approval. That's with the $400. So they didn't want to extend too high and they didn't want to create the chaos in our system if they budgeted on that $30. That $30 means about $240,000 roughly. If that's what we get is $30, it's an additional $240,000 for us in FY24. And I just want to add that with that $430 projected BSA increase, we still had to cut. So we cut just shy of $250,000 of classified support in our elementary schools. We cut a couple of special education positions. We cut a variety of things that are directly impacting classrooms. That's the only way that we could balance our budget. And so I appreciate your support for an increase to the BSA, and hopefully those give you a little bit of real-time exact numbers in terms of Juno.
Thank you, Dr. Weiss. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Professor, Superintendent. Getting there.
Yeah, maybe.
But for the moment.
One day.
Superintendent, can you go back to your COVID fund balance slide just so I understand where we are? So mm-hmm. $1.6 million is what I think you said your budget to start the next fiscal year at. So is the delta between what I see on the EED slide about $3.3 million?
Yep. Correct. The slide says 3.3, so it's a delta of about $1.7 million.
So thank you. Just the question is, will that 1.7 be accounted for by the April 30 and July 31 draws, or is there a difference between 3.3 and what you understand you had available?
Our expectation is that through those final two reimbursements of FY23, or April 30th and July 31st, that we will have a residual balance of 1.6 to spend next year, that we have budgeted to spend to finish out our COVID funds. So we are anticipating total expenditures of April 30th and July 31st to bring us down to that 1.6.
And the reason I'm going to come back and ask mm-hmm. it a different way is that I've had other districts tell me that the number on this list wasn't accurate as of the beginning of the school year.
Oh,
so the question just for you and your budget mm-hmm. is whether you anticipate the April 30 and July 31 draws combined to come to that 1.7.
Through the chair, because I forgot that the first time. I apologize. Through the chair. Senator Keel, the answer to that question is yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Weiss. Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Weiss, thank you for being with us today. I'm just wondering, what's your total general fund budget number per year? And get a handle on perspective of what your deficit's running.
Through the chair, our operating budget is about $77 million. And then with grants and COVID funding, et cetera, it jumps to about 90. Just over 90 million, 95.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Weiss.
Thank you very much.
We are moving back onto Teams with the superintendent of Bristol Bay Borough School District, Mr. Bill Hill. Mr. Hill, if you can hear us, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready. We are running a little bit out of time, so with as much alacrity as possible. Mr. Hill, do you hear us? Oh, no, I think there's a lag or you might be muted.
Can you hear me now?
We can. You're coming in loud and clear.
Great. Chair Tobin and members of the Education Committee, thank you for providing me the opportunity to testify in support of a significant BSA increase and to provide clarity around some fund balance questions that have come up. For the record, my name is Bill Hill, lifelong Alaskan educator, and currently the superintendent of the Bristol Bay Borough School District. You should have been provided a brief overview of our fund balances. I'll be speaking to these, and I'll be happy to take any questions that you have. Please note that we do not have a full-time professional business manager, and we have contracted support So any questions I can't answer, I can follow up with you after I've met with them. In general, our fund balances increased during COVID, but following the pandemic, increased spending due to inflationary costs and learning loss are having a negative impact on our fund balances. By the end of FY24, we will have a negligible fund balance, a general fund balance of about $74,000. And we have yet to fully define all the costs of implementing the REITS Act. From my perspective, this is a poor way to run district finance, as we should always allow room for emergencies or unexpected expenditures. Our pupil transportation fund balance increased due to COVID, but is set to decrease. We are currently in negotiations with our contracted bus provider, as their operational costs have increased as a result of inflation and the inability to hire local staff. They had to fly a bus driver in, house a driver, and pay her a salary of $70,000 a year to maintain the service. This is the reason we have a fund balance, to be able to accommodate changes like this. The contract negotiations should be wrapped up this spring, and so that FY24 number will change significantly. Capital project fund. We, as a school district, desperately need things like new cafeteria tables. As a part of our recent renovations, we struck the furnishings from that project so that we can more fully meet the needs of our building envelope and energy infrastructure. So we have needs there. The capital fund definitely helps us meet those needs on a regular basis. Our food service fund will not have a fund balance at the end of FY23 and will require a transfer from our general fund. As an aside, our partners at Lincoln Penn School District will be looking at completely cutting the food service program as the funding for that covers approximately a third of their cost, and they are in very strict financial straits in the coming year. Our student activities fund at the end of 2022 had a balance of $206,000. This funding comes from community fundraising and is held in trust dedicated to student activities and cannot be used for district operations. We do have some federal funds that come through. Those are all reimbursable and will be expended on an annual basis. Getting to COVID funding was directed to the two primary purposes that were stated that came with the funding: direct COVID-related costs and to support learning loss efforts like summer school and an additional learning loss staff member. BBSD did not use COVID funds to supplant expenses as a part of our regular budget. From our perspective, this would be a fiscally irresponsible approach to the use of the funds. If the funds had been designated as an inflation reduction funding, we might have been more inclined to do so. But it's difficult to justify programmatic or staffing expenditures on one-time funding. As you can see, we plan to completely expend all of our COVID funds by the end of FY23. Our school district is in good shape compared to many districts in our state. This is due to the enormous amount of support that our borough provides us. They fund us to the statutory limit, and yet we are now facing a time when we can no longer sustain our programs and staff. I'd like to address some of the rhetoric around fund balances, the timeliness of EADS access to district information, and the allegations that districts are hiding information. This is not the case. And in terms of business, any business owner can tell you that RFPs, contract development, invoicing, billing, and receipt of payment take time. For instance, we have some air carriers whose billing can lag by months. In order for districts to provide actionable information, we need to make sure that our budgeting, changes to the budget, needs to meet emergency or unexpected fundings are complete before we report those to EAD. Additionally, grant reporting is a quarterly activity that requires time on the district and the department. It's not a quick process. Finally, BBSD has applied for and operates under a number of other grants that have stringent requirements on how the funding is spent. One of the best ones we have is preschool. The only way we've been able to support a pre-K program is through state and A&E grants. These grants are directly allocated to pre-K and cannot be used to offset costs in the K-12 system. A significant sustained increase to the BSA is needed to stabilize education and provide the resources needed to provide a good education. We have seen deficits in education spending for years. Deficits that are not reflected on our balance sheet, but real deficits in programs and staffing. Bristol Bay School District does not have an art teacher, a music teacher, or a PE teacher. We have combined elementary classrooms, reduced secondary staff, and required those secondary staff to serve students in grades 7 through 12. We found efficiencies in operations and maintenance. We've developed partnerships, and we've landed grants where possible to provide more for our students. Alaska's education system will soon face real deficits to core programs. Please support a significant increase to the BSA and put it inside the formula. Please do not let the rhetoric that paints a picture of the districts flush with cash divert you from the efforts to provide a significant increase to the BSA. You are the champions our students need. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hill. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you once again. We now are moving back here to the room. We have the Chief Financial Officer of the Anchorage School District, Mr. Andy Ratliff. Mr. Ratliff, if you could please join us here at the table. I apologize as we're running out of time, so I'm going to ask you to just keep your eye on the clock as we have one more individual after you.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Andy Ratliff. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Anchorage School District, and you guys are going to get the auctioneer version of this presentation. So acknowledging that Anchorage and other districts, you know, we all don't have the same experience of when we hit that fiscal cliff or when we're going to, just want to put that out there. You know, we're not all funded. Well, we're all funded through the same formula. However, the amount of balances we have varied significantly across the spectrum. So I'm referencing the deed sheet for the fund balance. I just want to walk through the categories of fund balance that we have and what makes up those, because that $351 million, that's a significant amount of money. So I want everyone to understand kind of what makes up these numbers. So the first, that unreserved ending fund balance, $71.7 million, that's made up in two categories. One, $25.7 million is held to preserve the municipality of Anchorage bond rating. It's about 10%. It's 10% of our tax withholding. So we do that so we can get a better interest rates on our when we go and sell bonds and save the taxpayers money. The other $45.7 million truly is undesignated, but that represents a little under 1 month of general fund expenditures for Anchorage. For transportation, we have $3.1 million. That's dedicated to our transportation program, and about $2.5 million of that is planned to be used for FY24 to shore up our budget. What used to be 100% funded by the state is now about 73% funded by the state, and the rest is made up by either general fund contributions that should be going to instruction, local tax levies, or in next year's case, fund balance as well. So really, I mean, we've talked about that before, how our increase to our driver's wages really necessitated an increase to that fund as well. About $16 million remaining in capital projects funds. Those are primarily generated through voter-approved bonds, so we cannot direct those to other instructional uses. The other big pot of money we have is $167.7 million in other governmental fund balances. I should say we can tie out to the deeds number, so we didn't have any discrepancies on what deed presented. So of that $167.7 million, $90.5 million is in our debt service fund. About $4.1 million is through our local tax collections, and that is restricted for use to pay off debt. And the other $86.4 million is from the school bond debt reimbursement payment that we got at the end of that we recorded at the end of FY22 whenever the state repaid us that unfunded bond debt from the prior years leading up to, I think, 2017 to 2021. So that has been approved by the school board to move over to our capital projects fund. So if you see this report next year, you're going to see an increase in the amount of money that we have in capital projects. Our school board dedicated that towards some health and safety projects and security vestibules at our elementary schools. We have about $40 million of that remaining as undesignated or a project not identified, I guess. Anchorage was unique in that we got these funds. I believe every other district's municipality operates their bond repayments, so the municipality got the money and not the districts. But we're kind of the outlier on that. But we do have planned use, and the board has obligated that money for capital projects. $9.1 million is for food service. That's restricted for use for this food service fund, as those are federally mandated that it go towards food service, and we can't transfer that out to instruction. $5.8 million is for student activities. So as we see, as Mr. DeGrasse said, you know, we can't justify transferring those fundraised activities from the football club or other boosters out to other sources in the general fund. $62.2 million is other general fund balance. So this is when we get back into the general fund, the part that's kind of outside of that 10% cap. $11.3 million is our reservation for federal impact aid to account for next year's income from that. $18 million is for our self-insurance and workers' comp claims. So as we have all these insurance claim and injuries, this is the amount we need to hold to pay out those claims, you know, if we were to stop being self-insured. $28.6 million is encumbered for ongoing projects. What that looks like is about $17.9 million of that $28 million is reserved for charter schools. We allow them to carry over their unspent money as well, but it comes over and is encumbered, so it's included in that category. The remaining money is in ASD's encumbrances, are mainly for like major maintenance projects. When you talk about kind of a long-term strategy on doing that, those contracts typically go over the summer. IT software purchases that are multi-year, curriculum purchases that are multi-year, and then audits are some of the other big things that really make up the rest of that $28 million. And then we have fund balance reservations for prepaid items and inventory in the amount of $2.8 million and $1.4 million, respectively. So that really rounds out what we have of that non-COVID money. We have about $46 million that's truly undesignated. As for the COVID relief money, we have $92.7 million remaining according to this report. This would be like Juno. We are in the same boat where we haven't submitted expenditure reimbursements for our third quarter or our fourth quarter. I would say our fourth quarter is going to be considerably more expensive than our third quarter just by the way that we structure our teacher contracts. We pay them 12 equal payments from September through June, once a month for the 10 months, and then two extra payments in May. So that fourth quarter really does have a considerably higher expenditure rate than our other ones. So when you see that, we're projecting about $20 million or so to be left over, and we have that budgeted in, included in our budget for next year to be spent on class size retention, so to try not to increase our class sizes any more than we have to. We have built in a class size increase of 1 across all grade levels for next year to be able to balance our budget, and that's about a $7.4 million line item for us. So why do we need to carry a fund balance? The first one being cash flow. Fund balance loosely translates to having cash on hand to pay our bills. We have to meet our monthly payrolls and pay our vendors. One of the highlights is this COVID relief funding. We have to spend that money before we can get it back. So we have to have cash on hand to be able to spend this money and get it back. So having a healthy fund balance allows us to spend that grant money to get back to begin with. Another one is our timing of our property tax payments in Anchorage. We don't get those property tax payments starting until December. So you see our cash flow, if you look from July going down to December, it keeps going down, down, down until we get there and start getting our city tax payments, and then it'll start creeping back up to where we expect it to be. The other thing is emergencies. We have, over the last several years, we've had several emergencies that require the use of fund balance. In 2018, we had an earthquake. Immediately after the earthquake, the board allocated $30 million of our fund balance to be able to go in and start making those repairs, just so we can get students back in school. Some of that money will come back to us through FEMA reimbursements, some may not, but having that money on hand to start those repairs was just invaluable to be able to get students back in school. Had a similar thing back in early 2000s when Rush and Jack Elementary School burned down. School board was able to allocate money to start the repairs right away rather than waiting months or years for insurance claims. The other thing is unanticipated enrollment losses. You know, we get funded on that year, and we don't know how much money we're going to get until our October count. By that time, we have teachers on all our staff on contract, so if we lose money there, we still have to pay our staff. So having that fund balance lets us kind of give a buffer if those positions don't, if we don't have the revenue to support those positions. So for ASD's outlook, at the end of FY22, like I said, we had just over $72 million in undesignated fund balance, and of that, $26 million for the bond debt. The bond rating reserve. That's going to go up through the course of this year. The $16.2 million or so that we got for the one-time funding out of the $57 million that the legislature appropriated for FY23, our board decided to save that money and spend it next year. So it's going to increase our fund balance, but then we plan to spend it down. But just having not having the security of a constant BSA increase, our board decided not to spend that in the current year, but to push just kind of kick that can down the road. Our real problem is going to be FY25. So next year we have a balanced budget that includes $45 million in spending down our fund balance. So we do have some fund balance, but it's going to be spent down fairly quickly. And plus our $20 million in remaining ESER funds and then the programmatic change of the increase in the PTR. So really, by the end of FY24, if our budget comes to pass, everything's spent and received the way it should be or I planned, we'd have about $21 million in truly undesignated fund balance left, or about 1 to 2 weeks of expenditures. So we could get through 24. However, you know, there's so much urgency on getting a BSA increase in, for one, for other districts. I want to advocate for the other districts because not all of them are could put that much fund balance like we did. But two is the timing. So if we don't get a fund balance increase in this session, we're going to spend all our one-time money. We're going to spend all our fund balance that we have available. And then we're going to have an $85 to $90 million hole in our budget and no plan to be able to get out of that. We pass our budget in January or February to meet the municipality's timeline for our tax request. We don't know how much money we're going to get until May or June. So we're making all these disruptions to our teachers, to our other staff, to say, here's all these positions, 900,000 positions that may have to be cut, only to come back and say, maybe these positions are coming back. It's a significant disruption on the staff, and when they do staffing in March, those staff a lot of times are looking for other places to go, and we cannot retain our highly qualified teachers that may be on the chopping block. So in closing, you know, we really support a BSA increase, whether it's staggered in. I know all districts need different amounts, but if we were to get a BSA increase, that $45 million that we're planning on fund balance, that could go to some urgent capital needs. We have a $900 million backlog in our maintenance. So to be able to address some of that would be very helpful if we do get some one-time money. But again, it's, of course, up to the school board to direct. So with that, open up for any questions.
Senator Ray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much to you and everybody else who presented on fund balances in your school district. And I'm happy to say I truly understand why fund balance can't be used for anything else than what you said and everybody else did. But so my question on a side note is when it comes to bonds, what's the amount that's authorized but not sold? And if you don't have that answer, I'm happy to just get it another time.
I'd have to get back to you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I apologize that we can't entertain any more questions. We're going to move to our last presenter here today. I apologize, Mr. Levitt. It is going to have to be quick. Mr. Levitt is the business official for the Lower Yukon School District. We received a great email from your superintendent providing some additional information that I found very illuminative. Mr. Levitt, please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation when you are ready.
Through the chair, education committee. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Sorry, I've got a bit of a sore throat. I'll try to make this quick. So the Lower Yukon School District, we operate 10 schools, a 4th through 8th grade charter school, and a UPIC immersion K-3 immersion school in Hooper Bay, and the Kudlevac Career Academy in Anchorage. We are an REAA, or Regional Education Attendance Area, and as an REAA, we do not have taxing authority and do not have bonding authority and are completely dependent on state and federal aid. For fiscal year 2017, the BSA was set at $5,930. 7 years later, in fiscal year 2023, it remains the same. While the BSA stays flat, our costs rise every year, so just kind of some selected costs here. In fiscal year 2017, our electricity bill for the year was $1.6 million. In 2023, it's going to be $2.1 million, so $500,000 increase. Heating oil, $1.1 million in FY17. And FY23, we're at $2.45 million, so $1.35 million increase. Property insurance went from $484,000 to $872,000. General liability insurance went from $165,000 to $511,000. And our food program, our subsidy going into our food program, went from $980,000 to this year, looks like it's going to be about $1.5 million. Our general funds, teacher headcount in FY17 is 150. In 2023, it's 137. And our OASIS student count was 1,993 in FY23. So in this year, it's 1,923. So we've had a decrease of about 13 teachers over this 5 year period, and our student enrollment has decreased by about 70. With rising costs and flat revenue, the only way for our school district to balance the budget is to eliminate positions. The legislature has attempted to fill the funding gap by providing one-time funding each year, but this is a very poor method of doing business because there's no stability and no guarantee when looking at budgets for the upcoming year. School districts across the country generally start issuing teacher contracts in March, but in Alaska, with our patchwork funding plan, we don't know if one-time funding will be approved until June. As a result of the delay, we are creating a self-inflicted disadvantage in hiring or retaining qualified teachers. It would help every school district in the state with financial planning and budgeting if the legislature increased the BSA and moved away from one-time funding. The Lower Yukon School District carefully manages its budget and spending, but unlike borough school districts with a tax base, we are unable to tax and bond. When we have a major facilities issue, we have to pay for it up front and complete the construction with our own money, and then ask the state for reimbursement via the annual CIP construction application. Not all applications are funded, and requests can take years to be reimbursed, if ever. The Lower Yukon School District recently completed an emergency fuel tank farm pad repair in Marshall for $1.8 million, and we are working on an emergency fuel tank farm pad repair in Hooper Bay for $5 million. As our fund balance depletes, it becomes less likely that the school district will be able to take advanced action to mitigate problems before they become worse. So in these cases, the fuel tanks were going to just simply fall over and collapse. If we run out of fund balance, then we would not be able to take action to stop those tanks from collapsing. We have been a benefactor of federal COVID funding, but this does not help with rising costs in the general fund. We cannot use COVID money for our general salaries, for our electricity, for our heating oil, for property insurance, for liability insurance, or any of the other things that the general fund covers. The Lower Yukon School District has an unspent COVID funding balance of $12,632,000 as of March 31, 2023. This includes ESSER II and ESSER III funding. Most of this unspent balance is encumbered by a construction project that will take place over the summer to upgrade and install COVID air handlers in all of our school sites to improve indoor air quality. So the vast majority, almost the entire balance, is going to be used for a construction project. While the BSA has not increased for the last 7 years, the legislature has increased the burden on school districts to implement new mandates with no additional funding. The Lower Yukon School District has been implementing the Alaska Reads Act that was passed during the previous legislative session. To meet the requirements of the Alaska Reads Act, the Lower Yukon School District will need to purchase new curriculum that will cost around $600,000. As this is a general mandatory state education requirement, we are not allowed to use federal funding sources such as Title I-A that require supplemental purchases above and beyond the general requirements. The cost of implementing the Alaska Reads Act will put more pressure on the general fund in addition to the rising costs we see everywhere else. I'm available for any questions if you have any. Thank you for your time. I know that time is getting short here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Levitt. Any questions for Mr. Levitt? I am seeing none. I want to thank everyone again for providing this insightful testimony. I know it was a request that was made a bit at the last minute, and I really appreciate the work and the efforts to help us understand the complexity that surrounds school fund balances. Before we adjourn today's meeting, is there any last comments from committee members? Seeing none, I do want to take a moment to note that this will probably be the last time we see Mr. Blackwell here with us. It has been a joy and pleasure to work with you, and we wish you all the best on your endeavors in retirement. With that, that concludes our agenda for today. The next meeting of Senate Education will be meeting on Wednesday, April 26. We will be holding the public testimony for Senate Bill 56, Alaska Performance Scholarship and Eligibility. We will also be holding the first hearing for Senate Bill 120 to extend education tax credits, and we will be holding the first hearing for Senate Bill 132, Employment Tax for Education Facilities, sponsored by Senator Bishop. As there is no other business before the committee today, I adjourn today's meeting at 5:04 p.m.